bringing together the brightest minds to help you build a better business model. Welcome to Cannabis Business Minds, presented by LiveAdvisors.com, only on CannabisRadio.com. Here are your hosts, Simone Samaluka-Radzins and Kristen Yoder.
Hey, welcome to Cannabis Business Minds. Today we have a very special lady in the house, Renee Gagnon, spelled G-A-G-N-O-N. For people out there, if you want to look her up, she's with Hollyweed North, and we are super excited to talk to her about everything she's been working on and the crazy journey she's had from being a middle-aged white man to a trans woman who's dominating the cannabis industry and supporting women like no other. And there's no better person to tell women what it's like in the white male-dominated finance industry than from an ex-white male finance man, you know.
Yeah, so these are your hosts, Simone Samaluka-Radzins and Kristen Yoder, and we are super pumped to have you guys listen to this episode of Cannabis Business Minds. We're really excited to interview you.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
I've been watching you on LinkedIn for like 2 years, I think, like evolving through the cannabis industry. And
there was a lot that I couldn't talk about during the active phase when I was in the company. Because we were publicly traded, what you can and cannot say is strictly vetted through her.
Oh, yeah.
And so Jill was my communications director with Thunderbird. And so what I could post and publish on LinkedIn was largely whatever press releasey stuff that we had sort of generated. And then I was on a 1 year non-compete after I left, and then that also had a gag order on it. And so for a year I couldn't talk about the industry, I couldn't talk about the Canadian industry, I couldn't talk about the particular program that is in Canada, the ACMPR, and I couldn't talk about my former company, a whole bunch of things.
Wow.
So,
what did you talk about?
Well, see, that
so many people talk about their life in business, and if you're in the cannabis industry, that's all you talk about. So,
well, what was interesting was it wasn't really a coincidence, but I came out just after we went public, and it was pre-Caitlin, and Caitlin explained what this was. So before that, you were just going crazy.
I bet.
And in a very hyper-masculine financial community and public stocks and everything, it's not exactly what you'd call gay-friendly. And so trans wasn't even in the lexicon, so that was like even weirder than gay.
Yeah.
And they weren't really down with gay. So this was a novelty. So it gave me actually an interesting, weird opportunity to exit the company and figure out what I really wanted to do now, because the Canadian program was medical, and it was run under what would be the equivalent of the Canadian FDA.
Incredibly strict.
Brutal. Yeah.
Yeah, and like so pharmaceutical. Great.
It's strictly that. Yeah. Yeah. We had to use what was called Pharma BMP, which is best manufacturing processes. So exactly the same procedures and routines that Glaxo has to use to make pills.
Yeah.
So what it was largely implemented to keep the hippie folk out. Because if you put in front of the activist and the softer crowd a list of ridiculous paperwork requirements, 99% checkout.
Yep.
And that was deliberate. And so then they went to, well, we needed a 10-year security background check. That isn't the same as a criminal record check. A criminal record check is, have you been convicted or not?
Mm-hmm.
But the security background check was an interesting idea. So if you went to work for the CIA or the NSA, it's the same kind of background check you'd do in you. And they can reject you for just not liking you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of handy, too, because the government at the time was very what you'd call right-wing. And they were not fond of the activist and the long-haired crowd, particularly from British Columbia. And so when they implemented the program, they were looking for people that preferably knew nothing about marijuana and really loved this corporate framework. And luckily for me, I could fake loving the corporate side of it enough. But I'd also been a defense contractor in a previous life, which required having a brutally clean record.
Yeah.
Right? And so because I hadn't been with the activist groups and I hadn't been part of the original patient program, they didn't have anything to hold against me. And so I slid through, got my license, and we got to create a company called Thunderbird, which we were hoping to position for recreational.
So what we were talking about, though, is the whole investment and how, I mean, that's really interesting in so many parts about silos of information, because I 100% agree with you, but I think a lot of people don't realize, and if you could, when we start recording, we can start talking about that a little bit more, is that we realize in the startup culture that to propel a brand and to be bigger or to figure out, A, what you, how you want to get to somewhere a little bit bigger than you are, you're probably going to need capital.
Absolutely. And with specifically this little number that I came up with, and it was only just, it wasn't like, you know, I hired economists or anything, but I just had this gut thing that sort of built over a lifetime, was that any investment over $250,000 excludes women and minorities. And the reason is $250,000 is roughly what a woman can raise from friends and families if they take out second mortgages on houses and stuff.
Jesus.
Right? And that's how most small businesses start. When you look at mainstream America or Main Street Canada, you look at most of the small businesses that started, they're started by women. And what's the cost of them? They're usually franchises or small independent businesses or they're home-based businesses because of the capital requirements. Now, when you look at male culture, if you're working in a corporation, 10 to 1 you know a dude who went to a school who's working in a nice place. Well, you can always go to him and say, dude, I'm raising some money. And he goes, hey, I'd like to be in on this. So now you've got the first dude with a degree. And that dude with a degree then goes to the other dudes with degrees that he knows. And pretty soon you've got a team. Then you got a pitch deck with a whole bunch of nice MBAs on it. And then you go talk to a bunch of MBAs. They want to see themselves reflected in the pitch deck. And that's perhaps the strangest problem, because the guys in the room are usually white and male. And so if you're female and pitching, automatically you're not part of the club. Right?
That's a very good point.
It's kind of an interesting thing. And then when you look at just the dollar amount. So if you were to go and say, okay, who do you know that you could go and ask for $5 million? Okay, well, the weird part is you can talk to most guys over the age of 45, and they could go, well, I know a guy who knows a guy. Okay, and also if you're working in a corporation, you're usually aware of what's going on at the management level, and even if you're like board proximal, you know what goes on. Women are at a disadvantage if they're not exposed to what goes on at the C-level or the board level to be able to go into financing and discuss companies. One of the biggest things that I learned long ago is that venture capitalists want to talk about the company, never the product. Almost all entrepreneurs love their product. Because that's why you're in it, right?
Exactly.
You believe in it. You're passionate. You've given your soul to it.
That is the company.
But to the venture capitalist, it's not. That's how you make money. And so you as an entrepreneur, if you want to raise money, have to separate yourself. And what you're pitching is the company. And that by using their money to make these great products, you will make them money. You're allowed to believe in the product, fine. But they don't want to talk about that. They don't care.
It's about the numbers.
Well, more importantly, it's about the company that produces the numbers. And so that's why you start with team. So put together a really great team around you, and the team can usually compensate for whatever your failings are. And I've learned that. I've got many failings, and I can usually paper over with other people. And that's really what your job is. So if you're the founder of a cannabis startup, your first job is to put your football team together, or your whatever metaphor you want to use. But it's your job to find these people. And if you're usually an entrepreneur, your first big mistake is wanting to do it all yourself.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
No, yes. I mean, I agree. I mean, we, when we started working together, we were consultants.
Yeah.
And it took us this aha moment, like, no, we need to be in this. Like, we are a team. Like, I got your back. You've got my back.
Yeah.
And like, it's like, once you figure that out, it's like this whole stress has been like, just like released.
Yeah. You can't be competing against each other. And when you're in a beginning startup, part of the problem is when usually teams somewhat come together horizontally and it's sort of dynamic, there always has to be a leader. In any organization. And it could be in a partnership that what they talk about in Silicon Valley is the hacker-hustler paradigm. So the hacker is the person, the implementer, the doer, the person who does the code in that respect. And then there's the hustler, and they're the deal maker. They're the ones out, you know, knocking down doors and doing the other bit. And they're usually incompatible like they can't do each other's job very well, but they're really good at one. So this person's a salesperson. They're willing to go out and call on IBM or wherever it is and knock down the door, but then they have to turn to someone else and say, okay, do it. But this person, if left alone, couldn't feed themselves. But they're perfectly capable and brilliant. And so that's what, if you really want to try and make any success in cannabis and raise patient capital or what you the mainstream capital, first you got to prove your corporate reason for existing. What's your business value? Mm-hmm. And again, that's not even talking about products.
Mm-hmm.
And the big mistake is when your pitch deck leads with a product, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
Because your product can always be copied, duplicated, ripped off, or made cheaper by someone else. So you can't lead with that because you can argue it for an hour. You just check right out of their conversation. Yeah. What they want to hear is how your company with your team and these products will achieve success. And this is what you'll do to keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
But most people start with this great product and why this product is so cool and how no one else has this product. Well,
the true entrepreneur.
That's such a good point. That's something that we run into all the time is, I've got such a great product. Like, I don't need a business plan.
Yes.
It's like, are you insane?
Like, no mission, no values, no
nothing,
goals.
No projections, no like value propositions,
it's work.
Nothing.
And see, the thing is like most people have heard the term, well, it's all a waste of time. And unfortunately, that's true if you are a person who's slung 15 corporations out, raised a shit pile of money. You can say, quote, it's a waste of time because typically they're only looked at cursory. It doesn't really, but they're not saying don't do it. And they're not saying that it requires an investment in doing it. They're saying metaphorically in a big philosophical sense, it doesn't actually, once you're ignited, it will seem like it was not really that big of a deal. The problem is none of that footnote is ever put into the it doesn't matter part. And that's kind of the shorthand you learn in boy culture that never gets written down and shared. It's passed mouth to mouth, mentor to mentor. And so part of what I like doing is sharing these little secrets.
Yes. And
disrupt.
So it's disruptive. And it's also, it's
how
community.
How sad is that it's disruptive? Because we're women. Like, what?
Yeah.
Well, one of the funniest things that I sort of discovered with this whole silo thing was that I believe that what it came down to was that because the males have typically been forced into this combative, protector, soldier, warrior role, they've developed their own coping mechanisms for structure. And then when they went off to war, everything was left to the women to manage. So getting by, coping, interacting was a survival skill, and it develops this cultural requirement to check in, make sure everybody's on the same page. And if somebody stands out and brings their herd down, gone. Right? There's more of this. Whereas in male culture, I'm the biggest boss. I killed my best friend from university. I destroyed these people's lives. I work 90 hours a week. I don't even know who my family are. I'm a success.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, really.
It's insane. It's literally insane. But the problem is there's all these toys and trinkets and Ferraris and third wives and stuff that get dangled that supposedly make it better. But they're not.
It's power.
Yeah.
But it's an illusion
it's empty
of power.
Absolutely.
Because you become a slave to your issues.
Oh, absolutely.
It's
like
no matter who you were before you had money, that's who you'll be times 10 after you have money.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. And this is kind of where I was hoping that with women, when I meet them, is that you'll come across some women where they say, I want to be a Fortune 500 CEO. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take over the world. But it's not that common. And if you dug a little further, I think it would be also that's what I'm expected to do because I have my MBA.
Well, so this is so funny. This is actually what just happened with us. So we just finalized our business plan, and one of the most important things is your goals. And we're like, what do we really want? Like, because I worked in finance, in corporations, and international, because I work with investors all the time. I was like, we need to be a $25 million company.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, wait
a
what
second.
Do we really need and
Why?
Want?
See?
Yes.
Yeah, and then what are you willing to do for it?
Exactly.
Because, see, in the typical culture, the response is anything, dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
And that's your soul, it's your family, it's everything else. And so one of the things that I did when I rebooted my company idea, and because now that I'm out, and I literally get to throw down against my old male corporate culture for good reason, I decided I wanted to implement some weird shit that it shouldn't necessary. So I made a Facebook post a little while back, and I randomly number them to imply that I have a giant list. So it's like Renee's shit she shouldn't have to say out loud, but has to. And it was company policy number 560, and it was, at no point working in this company will you ever have to have sex with anybody else in this company. And I said, I'm sorry, we actually have to say this out loud.
Yeah.
And women, when I say this, are like, fuck, why do I have to say that out loud? Yeah. Why is that a revolutionary statement to make? Yeah. But I thought, no, let's be revolutionary, because this is a revolutionary industry. Why would we keep the old bad ways in a brand new industry? And if women have access to being able to produce cannabis, they'll able to have money. And if they have money, they have independence.
Exactly.
And that means that women's values, ideas, and structures can then become cemented and supported, because they're not dependent on man money.
Yep.
And this is the problem. If you watch like Dragon's Den or Shark Tank, you see everything I'm talking about in a television episode. You see these two young women come out that have their MBAs, they're in university, they borrowed money, they've got sales, they have their business plan, they're prudent, they're doing this, but it's involving soft subjects like children or education or something about caring or loving or humanity or the planet or something like that. And the sharks just rip them a new part. And then out walk these two guys from Wisconsin who built this thing in their garage out of 2x4s and coolers, expecting to get a $1 million check that day because they're such geniuses. And that level of confidence, though, is the difference. These women were prudent, cautious, and patient, planned, executed, were viewed as timid. You're not being aggressive enough. You don't have, how do I know that you're actually going to be able to go after this market? You do not seem to be that. And it's this whole paradigm of the old firm handshake, square jaw CEO bullshit.
Like, okay, so before we speak, because we're both like, oh my God, we totally have a story for that. But we're going to take a quick break.
Yes.
And we'll be back with our story in just a second.
Yeah.
Time for us to do some sponsor business. More Cannabis Business Minds when we return.
Hi, I'm Montel Williams. Most of you know me as a talk show host, but I'm also an author, actor, single father of four, avid snowboarder, and I'm also a medical marijuana patient. Living with multiple sclerosis, I'm in pain every day. Medical marijuana is my last resort, and it helps me when all other drugs have failed. If you'd like more information about medical marijuana, you can contact the Marijuana Policy Project at mpp.org or call 1-877-JOIN-MPP.
Are you disturbed by the prescription medication commercials on television and their endless list of side effects? They go on, and you end up having to take multiple pills to counteract the problems caused by the first pill. It never ends. Have you looked into CBD as a more natural option? At Saturn Ranch, we produce all-natural CBD topicals and THC-infused edibles. Premium lab-tested hemp-derived CBD is the most important ingredient in our products. From topical balms, salt scrubs, bath-soaking salts to tinctures and edibles, you're sure to find something to help. Family-owned and operated, we at Saturn Ranch believe in and use our products daily. Don't put anything on your body that you wouldn't put in your body. SaturnRanch.com.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Voober vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Voober vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be. The Voober way.
Great minds think alike because they listen to Cannabis Business Minds. Presented by LiveAdvisors.com, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Okay, so back from the break, and our big story, we're going to talk about the guy in San Diego, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we've been management consulting, and it's been very difficult to get people to want to pay for our information or our work.
Everyone wants it for free.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we're talking to this one guy, and he's got this big idea, open up Mexico, blah, 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 all these things. And he wants to really show us, like, talk to us face to face and tell us about his thing.
And we'd given him a proposal, like a discovery workshop proposal about 10K. And he's like, yeah, that's my entire budget. I'd love for you guys to, and we're like, okay, this is just a workshop. So that originally, like, hindsight 2020, but just to paint the picture a little bit more.
Yeah.
And so we're, he's like, oh, let me take you guys, like, I would like to show you what I'm all about and, like, meet the team and all this stuff. So then we get to San Diego.
Yeah, so we go to San Diego, and this guy, he takes us on this double-decker bus thing to smoke a joint to, like, you know, and then out for margaritas or whatever. And the bus was, like, really dirty. And it was, like, leaking air conditioner fluid kind of, or, like, condensation behind her head. And, dude, he literally drove us, like, 5-10 minutes down the street, and then we parked outside of a Mexican restaurant to smoke the joint. And then we go in, and we're talking for like 2 hours. Mind you, this happened. We told him, if we're coming down there, like, you have to pay for our accommodations and everything. Like, we don't do this for free. So then we didn't stop at the hotel first. We just went and met him first. And then after we were with him for like, what, 4 hours?
We go to the hotel.
We go to, not even that. Talk about in the boardroom after when we're talking about the timeline.
Oh, so I mean, to open up a country is pretty fucking hard.
Mexico?
And so, like, I've, you know,
nation
I present.
State like is narcos? A long
that's like, yes, drugs this is like a whole other podcast, right?
Yeah.
And so we're like, we work on MVP. We try to get the fastest solution for what you're trying to solve. And if that works, we'll move forward, right? And he's like, well, I'm going to need this in 2 weeks. And I'm going to only. And then taking originally down the price and all this stuff. And we're just like, okay, listening, not saying anything. Mm-hmm. Get to the hotel, because I really just want to get your feedback on this and what we could have done better, right? Get to the hotel, realize the hotel we have to pay for.
He didn't pay for the hotel. No, we got a $20 discount from his company, the hotel. And we're just like,
and then,
dude, like, this was so good, though, because we had decided already that we were, like, over-consulting. It's not, why work for yourself? When you're
helping
miserable.
Everybody's dreams,
it's
and
like,
you're not
what is our
own.
Passion? What are our long term goals? They don't align. So, anyways, we're there.
It was
there.
Perfect.
Yeah.
In like the silver lining, it was perfect.
Yeah, it was the straw.
But the oh my god, I can't believe this. And people look up to us as strong businesswomen, and we just faced this.
And we were like, we need to send him an invoice.
This
is insane. And then we were like, what if we were men?
That's what Kristen said, and that's where we get back to it.
The weird thing is that the lovely gift of a Y chromosome is a built-in sense of entitlement that girls just really don't understand. It activated with testosterone at the age of 12, and it's in the bone. Those guys that come out on Dragon's Den with their horrible ideas, you see it. That's the confidence. And it's the confidence that allowed that fellow to contact you with a bag of nothing.
Right? And sit there sucking our brains for 4 hours.
Whereas the problem is you ladies thought, well, nobody would do that to us because that would be really dumb. And why would that
That'd
happen?
That'd be insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And rude.
But again, you're not looking from his point of view, which is, it's worth a shot. Okay, so imagine that 4-foot-tall bald guy with one tooth that's 400 pounds, looks like a bowling ball in pants. He's still going to look at a supermodel and go, hey, babe.
That's what I always tell her.
That's the confidence. Yep. That's the Y chromosome talking. And it totally does not have any relationship to what they see in the mirror, what their life is. They could be trailer trash, you know, Billy Bob, you know, with his gun rack. He still thinks he's entitled to rule planet Earth.
I've always wondered why.
Yeah, that's it. It's a drug. Yeah. It's a really good drug. Testosterone is one of the best confidence drugs in the world.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've discovered on HRT going the other direction is how much I need to check in all the time to make sure that we're doing the right thing.
And
in male culture, that's seen as weakness.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's actually everything is so dangerous and balanced, we don't want to F it up. Right? Are we all on the same page? Are we all good?
Yeah.
Are you good? Are you good? Or how are you feeling? Are you okay?
Are we prepared?
And it's checking in.
Yeah,
and it's always checking in and making sure. And with guys, it's like, I fucking told you a month ago I'm feeling okay. Would you shut up about it?
Yeah.
But there's so much stuff has happened in the past month. No, not to motivate my mood.
Not in my eyes.
Yeah, no. Yeah. And so that's the different thing. And so in approaching the business side, what I wanted to also say is, look, what we're doing as a company, Hollyweed, we're going to say family first, family always, and that you don't have to apologize for having or wanting children or aging parents. That was the first line in our thing. Why? Because every time that it doesn't matter what we do as a cannabis company or any other company, if we're dealing with a large enough thing, dealing with processing, hygiene, or whatever, it'll be 80% female. Just the way it works out. And so if I've got an 80% female company, shouldn't I actually make the company about them? Yeah, I should. And that also means that if I'm asking you to give up 40 hours of your week, that's 40 hours you could be with your family. So I need to do something for your family. I need to support your family as part of you. And so when we refer to what we do, we currently support 12 families with our corporation. It also makes it very hard to terminate people because you're terminating a family. What a desperate concept. But we also look at what do we want our benefits to be? Well, we need to look at age care, you know, because who's going to be stuck with looking after their aging parents? Of both sides, usually it's the woman. And so if I want to hire powerful women executives who have little kids, we also have to acknowledge the fact that sometimes they get sick and it's not her fault and that she shouldn't have to eat her guts out and not come to work and feel horrible about it or also have to look at her kids and say, no, I have to go to work even though you're feeling horrible and all these other things because it's unfair and it's an extra tax on our female staff. And so if I have this opportunity to recreate culture, why not do it? And it's all for good business reasons. If you're coming to work,
employee disengagement is so costly.
Turnover, absenteeism, illness. You know, if you look at all these things that people game, it's always because their work is crushing them, it's killing them, and they're trying to escape and grab a little piece for them. And so I figure, why not build it into the culture right at the beginning? Because I would rather have you for 30 years of your hard, productive life and have you check in, check out based on your family needs. You want to go and have kids? Fine, great, come on back. We're still here, come on back, we want you. And it's not about you having to leave, it's just you're hitting pause. You know, and then you're coming back and hitting play again.
And that loyalty pays
the dividend.
Utterly.
And it's so funny that you bring that up because we pivoted from management consulting to now working on employee engagement and doing management training, leadership training.
Important.
Like, if you're going to promote people based on tenure to management, give them the tools to succeed.
That's
not something that everyone knows, especially when you have to start managing
in this
your
industry,
peers.
Especially.
But
well
it's,
done.
Yeah, people always forget that a company is the people in it.
Well, this is it. And what sort of this, so we touch on team again. And I think that one of the best things that women in the cannabis space can do is really focus on alpha teams. Just because that person was your high school friend doesn't mean your corporation will be good. You need to be as brutal about team as men are, which is ruthless and self-interested. If you're the founder of your company, this is about you building your team that supports you. This isn't about putting people together for their benefit. You're not, you didn't build your company for them to operate. You hired them to help you operate your company. So the way that I described it when I brought on several of my staff was, is that I built the Stradivarius. I'm hiring you to play it, but it's my tune.
I like that.
But you know what? I mean, people need to hear you say this because I'm listening like you're talking. I feel like you're talking just directly to me because as a woman, having two companies, everybody that I bring on, I always want to make sure that they're having a good time, and which is true. It's important. It supports the mission. But what you said, I'm like, God, I need to remember that. And so by telling somebody that, how can somebody learn that? Like, what is it? Like, you're teaching
women.
Well, this
is how. This is how. So Women Grow gave me the opportunity the first time to walk out on stage in Denver and tell 1,400 women that I had taken my company, I had financed it, taken it public, exited, transitioned, and that if I could fucking do that, all you straight white women in the audience... you're good.
Yeah.
And just that message is that a lot of the women came up to me afterwards and were like, I really didn't know if I had a place in this industry, but I'm going to go nuts. And then when we went back this past February, they were giving me updates about all their businesses that they'd done. And then the number of women that had gotten together afterwards and formed new companies and new ventures.
Yeah.
It was so exhilarating. And that's how I got the message out.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to be able to give some stuff. So in the first talk, what I gave was I gave basically sort of my weird little Yoda things, which is paperwork rules everything in legal cannabis. Now, you guys are still far away from legal cannabis, but it's catching up in California.
Mm-hmm.
And the first shock was when they dropped the initial regulations, everyone crapped their pants. Why? Because, well, these are what I was trying to warn everybody about for the year beforehand, and everyone said I was nuts.
Yes, I saw your warning.
Yeah, and the warnings were all about the fact that as you get more legitimate, there's a liability specter that creeps in. And so the government doesn't want to allow something to happen unless they manage their liability. So they manage liability by writing regulation.
Yeah.
And then they use standards to cover their ass because they didn't have to invent the standards. So they grab a standard like BMP, Best Manufacturing Processes, and say, thou must use it. They don't care what it costs or how hard it is to implement. All they know is that's a standard. Job done.
Yeah.
But your job is to implement it. And so one of the things that I'd done is I designed up a theoretical dispensary based on what the Canadian model was. If it was federal, high security, how would you have to have a store?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have that yet in Canada, and we probably won't for at least a year, and we won't have it in all provinces initially because it's very patchwork, and they're letting it decide whether it's going to be a government store, a liquor store, or however they've distributed, or if it's going to be just mail order. At first, we don't know, but I know in the States you already got retail.
Yeah.
And it ain't going away because you're American. And the thought of having this central supply system's way too communist-y for you, and you'd never tolerate it. And so you've already got retail. And you go to Washington State, which to me is right now at the apex of U.S. cannabis productization. Colorado was the first, but it kind of fallen because it's got the bifurcated exact product on this side be medical, exact same product on this side be rec. Let's have a silly bugger game of tax avoidance in the middle, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And so that's causing their government a lot of problems about it, but it's jeopardizing medical for patients, right, who can't afford this as a lifestyle.
Yep.
Washington State collapsed its medical program
because
it was too much problem, so now all weed is rec only. And you walk into these dispensaries, and this was my first sign that I was talking about supply chain issues 2 years ago, and that it's an inevitability of a mature industry, any industry, right?
Yep, exactly.
But folks in cannabis, for some reason, believe that cannabis is this unique plant that only exists in a special space-time bubble that only certain laws of physics and commerce apply to. And it don't. It lives in the world with the rest of us all, and it's got to pay its bills just like we do. And if you're not looking at dollars per square foot, regardless of what you do, you're stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not just like uneducated. I just mean you're stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I asked you to open up an ice cream stand and you had five little containers in the front and 8,000 square feet, you would know you're stupid.
Yeah.
You would know it. You would look and say, I'm stupid.
Yeah.
But for some reason, people build these giant dispensaries with these weird little shelves along the sides, and they call it, look, it's open and airy. No, that's $8,000 a month in rent.
Yeah.
And then in the United States, 280E, right?
Yes.
So you can't even deduct all your selling general
Exactly, yeah. So you shouldn't be living the high life just yet.
So when I released
the plans, so I leaked them on LinkedIn. And the reason was I thought, what the hell? So I put them up, and originally it was just the architect floor plan, and then I thought, no, they need to see the other stuff because they don't know how to put the cameras up. So I put the camera list up, the alarm zones, where you put the vault and everything else like that, which I know would bone like 20,000 consultants in California that were hoping to make a shit pile of money off it. But I'm interested in the women doing the job. I don't want to make consultants money on this thing. So here, women, have a blueprint. Now, if you take the blueprints and the other things, you should be able to jury-rig your existing dispensary to be half-assed in alignment. Yay!
Yeah.
Good news.
Yeah.
Now, for the ones that are building from scratch, and I've heard there's three dispensaries going in Nevada using the design because it helped them leap ahead.
Cool.
And that's kind of what I wanted. And that's why I wrote Steal These Plans on the plans when I posted them. Then I paid this lovely, I've got this group of women 3D designers in India that I use. and they're just absolutely brilliant. So I said, here's the floor plan. Can you actually render it up? Because I want to give that away too so that people can see what it looks like. And they're like, okay. But this is what I wanted. So now with this one package, you can see, here's a security desk. Here's the area of retail. Here's the behind retail secure area. Here's the layers that you have to go through to get into the vault. And these are all fundamentals that if you've been in my industry, so out of the 40 companies or so, there's only a couple of us that did our own work. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I needed to do it myself because I wanted to understand it. And I was also broke. I was in the same position that the women are coming into this. So when I got my license, we had spent $35,000 hard cash. That's it. But I've sat on the other side of tables from very shiny-shoed people in lovely suits bragging to me that they'd spent $9 million to date and hadn't gotten their license. And that's consistent.
Yes.
It's voice.
And it's hilarious because it's like, who would be bragging? Hey, I just lost.
Boys.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's boys. Boys. Oh, it's boys that are rewarded for the spending, right? Yeah. How much did you spend on your car? How much did you spend on your house? How about your second wife? You know, it's a list of bragging.
Yeah.
And that's why women on Dragon's Den lose. They come in and talk about how prudent and careful and thrifty they've been.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's not what the boys with the bucks want to hear.
Oh, my goodness.
What they want to hear is, you've got the secret to the universe. Only you have it. And you're going to dominate everything and eat everyone's babies and spit out gold nuggets. And that's what they want to hear.
Yeah.
And you have to give them that. That's one of the check marks. So learn to give them that. And if you can't give them that, don't ask for money from those people. There's other ways to find money for what you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Scale your dream to your abilities.
Yes.
You know, and if you don't have the ability to raise money, don't be out there trying to knock on doors to do it then. You're just going to look stupid. Come back in a couple of years. Make your first project to meet people who can help you.
Yeah.
And take time. Go find a local tech startup incubator somewhere. Join up. Don't say you're doing cannabis. Come up with some stupid, idiotic app that's bullshit. But learn everything they can teach you about a pitch deck, being able to pitch. Go to a boot camp. Drill it into your skull, the fundamentals, while knowing that isn't what you're going to do with it.
Exactly. Yes.
But you need the weapons.
That you're getting taught,
you need basic
right?
training.
Yes.
You need basic training.
Yes.
Yeah. And then you can go out and fight a guerrilla war.
Yes.
But you need to have the basics. You need how to shoot a gun and crawl through mud. There's all things, but you need to learn those from other people. So go to these lovely boy day camps and spend some bucks and learn how to write a business plan on the spot. And then once you can write a business plan or a quick executive summary on the spot, when you finally sit down and realize what you want to be when you grow up, it'll be effortless. You'll knock it out and you'll go, oh my God, I don't have the right people. I need somebody who can do this, somebody who can do this. And now you'll go and you'll meet those people and you say, here's my company. Here's what we're doing. I have a role for you. And they'll go, oh my God, I want to be part of your company. How are you going to lure them on with your product?
Exactly.
And so this is where we circle back. Build your company first. Your company makes products. People won't join you because of your products. They'll only join a company because that's what pays them.
Yeah.
Yes.
So build your team.
So,
build
your company. So with that, pearls of wisdom that will make you millions of dollars, and now you don't need a business consultant. Everyone who's listening,
need a coach or an advisor.
Exactly.
And also, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to get back, and we're going to just do a quick few questions and ask you a little bit about what you've been doing.
Sure.
Yes.
All right. Time for us to do some sponsor business. More Cannabis Business Minds when we return.
This is Bobby Black, host of Blazin', here to talk to you about 420 Science. I've known Matt and Gary from 420 Science for over a decade. We've spent a lot of time together at the Cannabis Cups in Amsterdam, the Doobie Awards in their hometown of Austin. They were even at my wedding. And I've always admired their integrity and how they've built 420 Science from the ground up to become the most trusted online head shop. Visit 420science.com/podcast for an exclusive deal on pipes and more from genuine people who put their customers first. That's 420science.com/podcast.
The smoke is rising, and the next crop of podcasts devoted to cannabis providers and enthusiasts are ready to be harvested.
Welcome to the Cannabis Radio Network,
founded by respected rainmakers who have been producing award-winning podcasts for over a decade. Industry headlines, business updates, medical reports, marketing, and e-commerce education rolled up perfectly for your consumption. Let's grow together. The Cannabis Radio Network. CannabisRadio.com.
Ignite the conversation on some trending topics along the Cannabis Radio social media network. Join our crew of thousands on our Cannabis Radio page on Facebook or at Canna Radio, C-A-N-N-A Radio on Twitter. Plus, look for our Facebook and Google Plus pages for all of our original programs and connect with Dr. Dina, Kyle Cushman, Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Nurse Heather, Doc Rob, the hosts of Gondrepreneur, and more. Connect with the growing Cannabis Radio social crusade at Canna Radio on Twitter or search for Cannabis Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and Instagram and grow with us.
Great minds think alike because they listen to Cannabis Business Minds. Presented by LiveAdvisors.com, only on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, so we're back with Cannabis Business Minds, and we're interviewing Renee. Renee, will you tell us just a little bit about, like, you've told us your evolution. You're clearly so wise, and, you know, you talked about your companies, and I know that you are, on LinkedIn, I think it was like a, I don't know if it was a startup junkie, but you've helped so many startups.
I had 13 of my own smoking tech craters over my career, and I had two exits. And I learned from the 13 what not to do, and I learned from the two what to do more of, right? And so this time around, I got to sort of have a complete whiteboard. And the first thing I wanted to do was put a team together that I could call a supergroup. Mm-hmm. And this industry has never had a supergroup because it's not that old yet. But I thought, there's always a first one, so why not be the first one? So I went headhunting, and I got to bring Jill back in. She had gone out and created all sorts of social media relationships throughout the industry and consulted for a whole range of other LPs and other people, and I knew I needed her back in to manage our corporate stuff. So Jill's responsible for when Hollyweed says something to the world, it passes through her first, because nice. We're a corporation. And A, I can't be sure that everybody in the company knows what's the right thing to say. She does, because she writes what we're allowed to say.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing. Get your talking points. So find somebody that can handle your communications. And then I had to bring in an operator, because I'm the CEO. I'm supposed to be out there in space finding the next opportunity. I'm the hustler. Mm-hmm. And that's my role. But I need a hacker, somebody that's going to operate and do that. And then I brought in Richard. And Richard was a startup person also, multiple companies, patents with Google, that kind of stuff. So tech. And he had never been in cannabis, mm-hmm. but he understands what it means. And also family members of his have used cannabis and benefited. So he's one of those people where their business, they buy in, they agree. They're not users, but they're willing to be there. And we need that too. Why? Because I'm going to be pitching money eventually, right? Mm-hmm. So in the beginning, I need to start putting together this team. I then got to recruit a lady named Leslie, who lives here in Los Angeles. She was a former VP of Disney Records, and then a couple other music companies after that and whatnot. But I needed someone that had experience working with A-list folks mm-hmm. and familiar with the entertainment industry, because what Hollyweed's about is that to stars, we're risk management. We will help you get your brand produced wherever it's legal to be produced, however we define that. Mm-hmm. But we manage the risk so that we know that at the end, the only thing they can say is that's not legal under this blah, blah, blah. But it's not about your label, packaging, or anything else.
I see.
And then on the other side, what we want to do is go to women makers and say, that's a great story you have. Can we publish it for you? And then what we're giving is economy of scale on demand. Because that's the one thing that women were wasting their time doing, was trying to raise capital for a machine mm-hmm. or a way of making their product, but doing it themselves because they couldn't get it done anywhere else. And so they're spending their time building up things which suck their capital away instead of it being in marketing and sales activities of their product, which derive their income. Buying new equipment doesn't help you. It's long term.
Yeah.
So if we go and put in a facility, let's say in Northern California, then people bring their product in, we can give it back to them in the carton and the bottle with their label on it.
Perfect.
And
contract manufacturing
exactly.
is desperately needed in this
exactly.
industry.
With and compliance, so right?
With I the mean. Compliance, yeah. And that's where our background is that we're a federally compliant organization. That's what our expertise is. That's what we did. But what we want to do is bring it as a service to folks here who otherwise would be stampeded under the shiny shoe guys who can buy that down the road for themselves. And so this is sort of accelerating the curve, and our focus is women and minorities, and being able to ensure that the people that have brought this industry to life and brought the products to the market continue to do so. But without having to suddenly figure out how to raise $10 million for plant and equipment that only they will use. You know, and then all of a sudden, what's your cost per bottle at that point? $1 million a bottle. And that's kind of hard to make money back. So if we can say to a lady, look, you want to make 1,000 bottles of your hand lotion, your medicated cream, you can make that in your bathtub, yes, and it'll take you a week, and you're going to annoy all your friends filling it all and asking them to help on, you know, the parties, which is what our industry does, right? Everybody gets together and does it. But that isn't how big companies got to be big companies. You know, they find ways of finding someone else to do this part, and someone else to do this part, and someone else to do this part. And this is what I'd like to go back to women and be able to offer is say, you're good at your business. We're here to support your business. And in return, what do we get? We get a partner that we can rely on. And then we can introduce to Celebrity X, and now we've got a brand that we can attach to a product that they can rely on. And this is kind of what we were trying to sort of bring out. And our launch party last night was our way of doing that. We didn't do it in Canada. We did it in smack dab in Hollywood. And it was an open party because we wanted to have a conversation with the entertainment industry and their people about our risk management services. So one of the best ways to do it was to not have people inside it that weren't part of this industry. And we had great conversations last night, and we're able to sort of roll out what we wanted to do. And it was incredibly well received. And it's the right time for this. And so this way we can help be able to say, okay, look, you know, you're a collective in Northern California and you're producing X. Great. We'd love to contract you to keep producing X, but for us, and we'll fix the price at this. So now you don't have to worry about this, you know, dropping and rising based on the popularity of Gorilla Glue this week, right? Or who, Tangy, I'm growing Tangy now, right? And this is one of the cyclical things. We want to be able to say, contract this with us. We'll grow this. And together, guess what? We're going to sell it. And then you get paid, we get paid. The dispensary knows that, guess what? Someone's actually humping their product and driving the customer into the dispensary to buy it. You know, because that's how it has to work. We've all come from other industries where this stuff was normal. But in cannabis, it's literally like you're inventing stuff from the scratch. And I'm like, stop. There's other stuff on the shelf. Let's go to the shelf. Let's go to the shelf and buy
Something we say all the time.
We don't get it. It's
You're
like,
not reinventing the wheel.
No.
It's a plant.
No, selling pot to people is the third oldest profession in the world. Okay, prostitution and selling water to people in a desert were the other two.
That's number two, okay.
They always said it was teaching, but I always thought that was unfair to teachers. They don't get paid that much.
Exactly.
Bad prostitutes, if that's the case. But water in a desert, that made more sense, because there's always been deserts. And as long as there's a need for something that isn't over there, there's someone to arise. So our whole industry is about satisfying need. And if legislators were really true capitalists, loyal to Adam Smith, they would actually realize that they're interfering with capitalism. They're interfering with consumer choice. They're interfering with the market having its own ability to decide what adults are able to do. And so I find that very actually socialist and very un-capitalist, actually, if you want to turn it around. And to sort of end it on a note, I came up with a new metaphor that I want women to start slinging when they're coming up against opposition and safety issues about their product. If you had set up a company that made baby cribs, okay, best baby cribs in the world, and you sold 100,000 of those a year, statistically, you will kill some babies. Right? Guess what? Our products never killed a baby. We're safer than baby cribs.
And why do we still have to remind still, people of this?
Right. So let's go graphic. Let's talk about it. Vioxx killed 100,000 people's grandparents. Marijuana's never killed a grandparent. Woohoo! Let's talk like this. We're trying to seek permission. No, I'm sorry. I'm trans. I understand. That doesn't work. Okay?
That's
existence is already a thing. I'm not negotiating existence.
Yeah.
I'm letting you know what my rights are.
Amen. That's
the difference.
Yeah, right? Seriously. Yes.
Oh my God, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. This has been an absolute pleasure.
Yes, you'll have to come to our Women's Empowerment event that we're doing.
When is it?
We would love you to be a leader.
July
22nd. Yeah.
Where? Downtown
LA. Yeah. Ooh. Are you guys going to be here?
We would love...
No, I can plan stuff out like this. Yes. That's one of the luxuries now. Yeah.
Yes, we would love for you to speak and be a leader.
I'd be honored.
Oh my God, that'd be awesome.
I would be...
Like, everything that we've talked about today is literally exactly where we're at as far as women's empowerment, as far as going through our business plan.
I'm saying nothing new. I'm just, what I find is really interesting is for 48 years, I listened as a outwardly male, not being part of that culture. And I was listening to the other side of the women talking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what they didn't know was that I was one of them. And so when I was able to be able to articulate what I'm saying, I'm just saying what I've heard from women for a very long time. I'm not inventing anything new, but because of my unique position and where I was able to come from, I'm able to actually say it. And women are like, yeah, that's exactly what I mean.
Yeah.
And other men are like, oh, shit. The Y chromosome said something and we feel this overpowering need to listen to it.
Yeah.
And that's all. So that's what I see myself as.
Well, thank you, though, because it's crazy. Like, when people are coming up to us and saying that they're feeling, you know, that they don't have a voice. And then
Marginalized.
Mm-hmm. And then they look to us and we're like, oh, we feel good. And then we're like, we need somebody. It's like, everybody needs somebody.
Everybody needs
a
mentor.
I have mentors.
Yeah. It was the first thing I seek whenever I begin a new project is I seek mentors. You better have people smarter than you around you, or you're really a shitty boss.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
Enron
absolutely.
Had a room full of brilliant MBAs.
Yeah.
Brilliant male MBAs.
Yeah.
Flaming dumpster wreck.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I mean, it's totally not funny, but to use Enron to stand for, like, what happens when a bunch of...
Yeah.
Like,
it is, to me, the perfect distillation of testosterone in a box wrapped
exactly.
with an MBA.
Exactly. I never thought of
it. And everybody doubled down on it. It couldn't fail. Why? We've got 18 Wharton MBAs, 13 Yale graduates. We've got the former chairman of this, that, and the other thing. Look, it's an entire box of testosterone. It should be radiating pulses of light, for God's sake.
Well, it also goes to show how important your team is to getting investment. It's like, who's on the team? Who
it's
are we
huge.
Actually investing in? Because that's where the ROI is.
But here's what you can do, though, is that you could have a team where you deliberately chose to build a rainbow. As long as each color of that rainbow is independently supportable by their career, you've enforced diversity without them being able to question qualification.
Mm.
Because the cool part is, use first initial, last name, don't use pictures and talk about what they've done.
Yeah.
You slide that through that call, and then if all of a sudden they have an objection over color, that's not your fault.
Yeah.
That's
really
so
good point.
Pitch your team's capabilities, not who they are, unless they're famous.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then if they sign off on the qualifications, then introduce your rainbow, baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nothing they can do, because they've already said
that.
It's a good business.
Yes.
And this is how I think women can start helping sort of bring their other sisters through, is again, realize that it is, at this unfortunate stage, capital is a beauty contest, but it's based on a set of checklists.
Mm-hmm.
So, follow the checklist, do it your way.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Follow it, but don't necessarily comply with it.
Yeah, amen. You got to know the rules to break them.
Absolutely.
Yes, well, oh my God, thanks again.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
It's been awesome. So, this has been a great interview.
Yeah.
And we will send everyone to your website.
Lovely.
Yes. And we'll put it all in the show notes.
And
all that stuff.
We'll let you know about the Women's Leadership Summit.
Like
thank
ASAP.
You very much.
Yes.
Yeah. And enjoy your guys' time in California.
Yeah.
Thank you.
How long are you in LA for?
We leave tomorrow. She's flying home. The rest of the team sort of departed today. We brought everybody down for the party.
Nice.
And then my fiance and I are heading up into the desert to see Barbie's moonlight party out in the Joshua Tree.
So freaking beautiful at night out there.
Right?
It's one of the 10% of places you can see the Milky Way with your bare eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And this
is so
it's
dark.
It's a progressive dinner in the desert.
Oh, how cool.
And then it's under the full moon, and the Joshua trees are apparently at the end of their bloom.
Oh, but they're still blooming. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, we had to do that. And then we're going to Vegas and lie at a pool for a day or two.
Nice.
Oh, enjoy.
Yes.
Enjoy. All right. So we just had probably one of my favorite interviews of all time for Cannabis Business Minds with Renee from Hollywood.
Renee Gagnon.
Yes.
Spelled G-A-G-N-O-N.
Yes. But wow, what a powerful voice for women, an insight of knowledge, expertise, and just passion and just great energy.
I told you she was a gangster. She's
such a gangster.
I've been following her on LinkedIn, and she's bringing Canada standards to California, which that's a task unto itself. But mm-hmm. I mean, she is, I just think it's so cool that she has the white male perspective.
Yeah.
Having been a white male for so long before she, you know, went trans.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's like she's got the woman, she's all women everything, and she's helping everyone for free, giving away dispensary plans, like.
Yes. Like, what a pioneer. So for you, what's your, like, one key takeaway from this interview that you're like, oh, man, I'm going to apply this in my life, I'm going to utilize this, something that our listeners could also be like, yes.
I think it's something that we've already discovered, that we've been learning over our consulting career, is we are only as valuable as we treat and hold ourselves to. Like, no one is, just because we're women doesn't mean that people are going to take care of us. Like, we need to stop assuming that. Like, I don't want to say we need to put our man pants on or whatever, because women can do this too. But I think that is so important, is for us to be able to be like, I own the room. Like, I am worth what I say. Like, I'm not here to mess around. Like, you know.
100%. I think for me, my takeaway, there's so many. That would be one of them. And then, gosh, the other one is probably what we were talking about at the very beginning of building a team.
Mm.
And how when you're starting a company, if you're a founder of a company, that's your company, right? And if you decide, like for us, like we founded this together, so then anybody else that we bring on, that's like our company. But if you are kind of have this idea, you're building a team. And that team is so important. So you need to vet that team. You need to nurture that team. But you also have to realize that that's a team to support you.
Exactly. Yes. That's the other massively important point, as women are caregivers. We're naturally considerate of others. We can't lose sight that it's our company. It's what we're doing. We're bringing people on and we want to support them. But it's a two-way street on this one in support, you know, but 100%. Support of the mission, which is why you need to have your mission anyways.
Yes.
So that everyone that joins your team knows exactly what they bring to the table.
And before we wrap up, I think the biggest thing is like we always say it too, is like, you have, and Renee said it, a product's a product. It's a company that you're building. And it's crazy when we listen and we talk to business owners that haven't done a business plan or hire us to try to do their business plan, where we just stop doing it because we're like, no, we'll give you advice. Well, you can go through our 8-week coaching program and we're going to teach you how to, you know, do your business plan, your mission, your goals, all that stuff. Because honestly, if, you know, just to all those listeners, if you're thinking about starting a business, or if you know someone that's starting a business, or even if you're just like an employee at a business, the moment that you decide to go it out on your own, you really, I mean, I don't even know what the number one thing is, if it's your goals first or your team, that is a TBD. But the point is, you need to understand the whole life cycle of building out your business plan. It's not a joke. It's not going to take, you can't even finish it in a week. That's honestly an 8-week to 12-week process of really working and thinking about it hard.
And it goes back to the sharpening the axe. You know, it has forced us to really, really think about what we want to do. It's, I mean, look, I am guilty of not planning. I am super guilty of that. And oh my God, everything is so much more difficult. And then we sit there and all we do is strategize, plan. Mm-hmm. Do I want to do this? Is it aligned with our values? That seems to be like the biggest thing we keep coming back to. If it doesn't align with our goals and our values, then boom.
Why would we do it?
We don't need to waste our time anymore. Nothing is a difficult decision anymore.
Yes.
Because in the end, does it align? And if it doesn't, then there you go. Because it is easy to get green rush fever. There are so many people with stories, products, ideas, with this energy. It's like contagious. But yeah. Does it align with your goals? Do you have goals? Like, you can't make sure things align without
having the goals. And for all this, we're like, well, no, I'm hustling and I'm making money. Yes, good for you. Now stop, take a little bit of break, and you don't have to do this overnight, but really think, do you have a mission statement? Do you have goals? Do you have objectives? Do you have realistic goals?
Yes.
All those things are super important.
Yes, and your life will get a lot easier.
Yes.
It's not fun. It's not fun doing it. It hurts my brain to really focus on all that stuff, but God, it's like...
But you do it once?
Yeah.
And then that Bible is there?
Yes.
And then I had this like epiphany a while ago. Like, I haven't even told you. If you do a business plan really well, that turns into your company's operations Bible. That means that, you know, if you really go in and detail out your business plan, then it's going to be so much easier to standardize every process because you've already kind of standardized how it should be in the business plan. So it's crazy. I'm just curious, like...
Obviously, you need to get paid, though, while you're going into this crazy details. So just to even have a small little baby business plan or something...
That you can chip off and, like, tackle,
Work on it. Yes.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you all for joining another episode of Cannabis Business Minds. This is your host, Simone and Kristen Yoder from Live Advisors. You can check us out and check out all of our offerings on www.liveadvisors, A-D-V-I-S-O-R-S. I think that's too many S's.
S-O-R-S?
No. No, okay. .com. And then we're also with Cannabis Radio, so you can check them out and all the other shows that they have on their platform, which are a lot of great cannabis business and cannabis lifestyle shows.
Yes. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us for this edition of Cannabis Business Minds. You can download episodes of our program by going to cannabisradio.com or subscribing to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and very soon on iHeartRadio.
The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without proper consent of CannabisRadio.com is prohibited.